You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by a very important podcast called A Better Night's Sleep. You want to know how to help your partner or your kids sleep so that you can too? Open your podcast player and search for A Better Night's Sleep podcast to answer those questions now. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. I am Paul Coliani, a personal empowerment coach and one who cares about your healing and growth very much. This is the show where I read your questions and help you tackle life's toughest challenges. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. All right, thank you so much for joining me today, and I'm going to get right into the first email. I brought it with me on a recording that I was going to do with Matthew Bivens. If you've listened to the show a while, you've probably heard some of the episodes that Matthew and I did together. I think we make a great team, a lot of great conversation, and he has a perspective that I absolutely respect and appreciate. So I like to bring him in on these shows every now and then, and we play them midweek. So if you've never heard that, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, The Overwhelmed Brain, and you'll hear the other episodes that I did with Matthew. Regardless, I brought this email along with another one, and we ended up reading the other one on that show, which is coming up probably in a couple days. Either way, you'll hear our episode where we get into some other stuff, and it's really interesting as always, at least in my opinion, and I think you'll enjoy it. But this email, you know, we looked at it and we looked at each other and we're like, wow, where do we go with this? It had to do with having a child and the difficulty that would happen if your partner wanted a child, but then changed their mind. Or you wanted a child, but your partner didn't want a child. There's something that can happen in a relationship when you're both on board for a child, and then one of you just decides, I don't want one anymore. Or let's change our plans. And the other one's gung-ho about having a child. And now what do you do? That's like a scary thing to think about. If you're both on board and suddenly one of you changes your mind, which is what this email is about. There's other things in the email that I'm going to highlight, which you'll hear in a moment, but just think about that for a moment. Let's just say that your partner wants to do something with you that you really want to do. Like, you know, it could be a child, could be a vacation, could be anything. And you plan for it. Months, maybe even years go by, you're planning for this thing. And your partner says, you know, maybe we shouldn't go in that direction. Let's change course. What do you do? What do you think? You know, what goes through your mind? Because if you're really on board with what's going to happen, and then suddenly your partner changes their mind, what happens to the relationship? That's a tough question. I mean, has this ever happened to you in your relationship? You're both on board with something and then suddenly it's not that anymore. Your partner wants to go in a different direction. Does the relationship end? Do you stay in the relationship and hold on to the resentment? What do you do? So that is the big challenge for me today. It would have been great if Matthew and I addressed this, and maybe I'll discuss it with him on a future show. But I'm going to tackle this one on my own today. And if the person who wrote this has any further questions on it, certainly reach out and let me know. But let me get into this. I'm going to call this person Mary. Mary writes, "Hi, Paul. I see that you sometimes answer letters and provide advice, and I'm hoping you will answer mine." Yes, I do that often. "I'm 40 years old, and I feel like I'm at a major crossroads in my life, and I'm not sure what direction I'm headed next. I guess I'm feeling lost and not sure what help I need or how to move forward. My husband and I have always wanted another child, and I wanted to spend more time being a mom and less focused on my career. We tried to conceive earlier in the year, then my husband suddenly changed his mind, deciding he didn't want any more children. He said he is scared. He thinks we're too old and wants to focus on our financial future. I've been hurt and devastated for months now, and I can't seem to get over it. We've had a few discussions, and he hasn't changed his mind except for saying that if it's what I really want, we will try for another because he doesn't want me to resent him. He also said that he would love to have another child, but doesn't think it's the right decision for us and that our time to have another child has passed. I love him, but I'm afraid I'm already starting to resent him. It hurts, and feeling like you have no control over what you want in life because of your spouse is an awful feeling. Right now, my heart is breaking every day, and it's making me feel like passing on the chance to be parents again is a huge mistake. I went back to work full-time, trying to put my focus on my career, but it's not helping me move on. I feel like something is missing, some major life event that I will not get a chance to experience, but I'm afraid I will carry this around with me for the rest of my life. I believe I suffer from depression. I have no motivation for work. I can't concentrate, and I feel like my life is on pause until I figure out what my purpose is. My depression has been an issue for years and doesn't seem to be getting any better. I do see a therapist, and I'm on medication, but it's not enough, and this situation has made it worse. These feelings haunt me constantly and keep me from making much progress in anything. I know God has a plan for me, but I don't know what it is. I just want to follow my heart and be happy. Part of me thinks God wants me to make more time to take care of myself before taking care of another child, and if my husband and I are meant to have another child, it will happen. I just want to figure out what the next steps will be and not feel so sad all the time. Can you provide some guidance on where to go from here? I appreciate any help you can provide. Thank you. Okay, Mary, thank you so much for that. And that's a tough one, like I said. And it would certainly change the relationship a little bit because, like you said, you're already starting to feel resentful. Now, I will give credit to your husband. There's two things that he did that are noble. And, you know, I don't know if noble is the word, but they're, I think, the right thing to do. One, he spoke up. He was honest. He said, you know, I'm afraid of the future. I think we should work on our finances. We're getting to that age where maybe our time has passed. That must have been a hard thing for him to do. So I give credit to him for bringing that up because a lot of people will just swallow what they're really thinking and never bring things up and just hope things work out for the best. I really appreciate that he was honest enough to do this, knowing he'd probably disappoint you, knowing that you'd feel pain because of this. The other thing I'd like to give him kudos for is that he was willing to go, you know what, if you want a baby, we'll have one. You know, he realizes that he made that commitment with you, and now he's ready to jump on board and do it again if that's what you really want. Now, great. Those are great, two great things. The downside to that second thing is that there's an overly implied, I'll do it, but I won't like it. So the way he may have stated that to you, you know what, if you want a baby, great, I'll do it, but the unspoken, but I won't like it. And, you know, I'll love the baby. He says, I'll love having another child. It'll be great. But I will have this underlayer of resentment or whatever might be going on in him. At least that's the interpretation that I get when I read your letter. So that puts you in a tough position of, you know what, you said you wanted it. I mean, this is you talking to your husband. You said you wanted another baby, or you said that you would do it and support me in that and support us in having one, but you imply that you won't be happy about it. So what I really like from your husband is to step into a solid yes or no. Now, what I mean by that is either no, I don't want one. If you want to have one, this relationship will be difficult for both of us because, I mean, this will be honest, right? This relationship will be difficult for both of us because we're going to have financial problems and I don't want a child. I know I said I wanted one before, but here we are. We're getting up in years. I got to think about our finances, about our future. And quite frankly, I don't want one. That may not be a wonderful position that you want to hear, but at least that would be a solid no. Or a solid yes. Because here's the thing. A solid yes would be, all right, let's do it. I'm on board. I completely support this. I will love this child, which he's already said, but without the implied, but I won't be happy about it. So if he gets on board and says, yes, I'll do it. I'm all for it. Let's arrange. Let's do this. I'm going to set up our lives, set up my life, set up our lives to handle this new addition to our family. I am looking forward to it. I prefer solid yes or solid no. If he goes in this other direction, which I mentioned, of yes, of course, I love you, I'll love the child, and I'll do everything I can to make it happen, yet I won't be happy, even if that's unspoken, then that puts a layer or a burden of guilt or whatever you might feel about that on you. That's like saying, you know what, I'll do anything you ask, but I won't like it. If he says, I'll do anything you ask, but I won't like it, that puts you in a place of responsibility for his emotions. And that's not really fair to you. So I don't like the idea that he puts you in this middle space where now you have to take responsibility for how he feels. It's a tricky one because I think he means well. But for him to lay it on you and say, yes, you can do it, absolutely, but I won't like it, means that it could supply a future argument somewhere down the road. I mean, that's what I see. If I pull out my crystal ball, that's one of my clients said the other day, pull out your crystal ball. And I pull out my crystal ball and I look and I go, you know what? 2 years from now, when things are hard and money's tight and, you know, other things are happening, I wonder if your husband would bring up, you know what? I never wanted the kid in the first place. That's what I worry about. So maybe you see this down the road too, which is why it's important, especially in this matter, you get a solid yes or a solid no, because in between, you can't work with that. It's not tangible. It's not solid, like I said. So that's too tough. I think I would need to have him on board completely or off board completely. So at least you can work with it. Because let's just say that he gives you a solid no. Now you know exactly where he stands and the ball is in your court. That doesn't make it easier, I know, but the ball is in your court. And now he can say, you know what? I've made up my mind. You know my answer. That's what you have to work with. That would be truth. That would be a hard truth that you have to deal with, but at least it's something instead of this in-between place that you might feel. So if you can get him either fully on board or off board, if that's a word, then you can get to a more solid platform from which to make a decision. So that's part one of my answer. Part two is you said something very key that kind of concerns me a little bit. Well, there's two things. Obviously, 40 is what, the new 35, I don't know. 40 is getting up there. There are more complications as you get older, but I'm not going to give you any grief about that. It's your decision. It's totally up to you. If you want to, you know, take any extra risks that may be there because of your age, that's totally up to you. So I won't give you any grief about that. But the other thing I want to talk about, which is very concerning to me, is that you've had depression for a while. And the reason that concerns me, not the obvious reason, which is, hey, you have depression. That's terrible. Let's, you know, try to fix that up and get through that, because no one likes depression. But the reason it concerns me in this case is that it leads to the question, are you bringing in a child to help you feel better so you aren't so depressed? That concerns me. I realize children, they can be wonderful bundles of joy and they can bring you happiness and they can alter your emotional state. But if you have a reliance on that child to bring you some sort of positive feeling that you can't do yourself, this puts the child in a tough position. I know as a baby, it's not going to really matter as much, but as they grow older, if your reliance on that child to get through your depression, to feel better about yourself, to feel better in life in general, continues and you're not getting over this depression, you're not getting through it, then the child could end up in a very difficult situation as he or she grows older. Because a parent who has an overly dependent need on the child doesn't necessarily have an opportunity for the, I'm really pushing the envelope here when I say this, doesn't really have the opportunity to have the healthiest kind of love he or she could have. I'm not saying it wouldn't be healthy love. I'm not saying it wouldn't be the best love you could possibly give a child. But when there's any type of dependency on the child, then the child becomes the source of, you know, happiness, joy, of everything for the person who really needs it to make up for something that's not in them. I mean, it's the same with relationships. I like to give the advice that what you bring into the relationship and you don't require from the other person makes the relationship healthier. So if you don't bring in a high need of always wanting to be with them and you can't be happy without them, if you bring that into the relationship, that can wear on the other person. It can create a highly dysfunctional, dependent or codependent relationship that will suffer and eventually break down most of the time. So whatever needs you bring into the relationship, yes, there are wants and there are needs in every relationship, but if there's a high need for something, like you didn't get enough love or attention or something else in childhood, so you seek that from an adult relationship, you're more likely to have some sort of breakdown in that relationship because the dependency can't last, because it's too much drawing off the other person instead of a balanced give and receive that a, quote, normal, healthy relationship should have. So like I said, that really concerns me that because you're depressed, are you using the idea of having a child of helping you not be as depressed or helping you get out of your depression? Because if you are, I really need you to consider doing whatever you can to help with the depression first. And I know you've been working on it for years, and I know you're yelling at me saying, if I could, I would. If I could have done this, if I could have fixed this by now, I would have. So don't tell me something I don't already know. I realize that. I've had episodes on depression. I've had depression myself. And what I found a lot of the time is depression stems from the suppression of an initial thought, something that you want to express but you don't, a repression of the subsequent emotion because of that thought. So you stuff it down, you swallow it. And because you carry that around, your body doesn't have, this is going to sound so out there, your body doesn't have the free flow of emotional energy that it could. Again, that sounds out there. It's not very scientific, but you can feel it. When you swallow an emotion, you can feel that it stays there. How many times have you swallowed anger and you walked around with it for days, weeks, years? I did that for a long time. I held hatred in me for 35 years, and I didn't even know it was in there because I swallowed it a long time ago. That's the problem. This is why depression is so rampant, is that we swallow these things so long ago, we don't even realize they're in there anymore. We just get depressed. Our mind, our body, everything just gets down, depressed. So we walk around life in this depressed state, and we feel like this is normal. This is our new normal. We'll try to get help and it doesn't work. And often, I'm not going to speak for everyone. I'm not going to say that depression can't be physical or chemical or anything like that. But I highly recommend that if you are depressed, that you reach into your past and figure out when you started swallowing the emotions. Even the first time you swallowed anger, hate, sadness, shame, guilt, embarrassment, humiliation. Think of anything negative that you don't want to feel, and think of the things that you wanted to do or say, but never did and never said. And if those are still in there, and you can learn if they're still in there, because if you think of that moment and you have any of these feelings, and it's not a neutral feeling, then it's probably still in there somewhere. And you may still have emotional triggers by it if you're sensitive to similar situations where you swallowed your emotions. For example, I used to be very sensitive around people who drank and got drowsy and started slurring in their speech because I grew up with a very aggressive, violent alcoholic who did the same thing. When he started showing those symptoms, it got scary. So I held on to this fear. There's another one. If you hold on to something like fear and you never had an outlet for it, you never expressed it to anyone, you never, whatever, screamed about it, cried about it, you never threw a punch at a pillow or a person, you know, if you kept all this stuff inside of you and it never came out, especially if you placated it, if you invalidated it, if you said, no, I shouldn't be angry, no, I shouldn't hate, if you started doing that to yourself and not ever having it come out as full expression, then it stayed in there. And that's what I did. I remember swallowing my emotions when I was a child because I didn't feel safe expressing them. If I expressed them, then I might invoke drunk dad behavior, and I didn't want that in my life. So what else am I going to do with these emotions? I'm going to stuff them down there. And stuffing them down there created a low level of depression for a lot of my life. I didn't notice it because I had, you know, a good sense of humor. I had a positive outlook. I had a positive attitude. You know, I got all that from my mom, who really placated things, who really people pleased and was the rescuer and tried to see the positive aspect of everything, was in complete denial about what was going on and didn't do anything to get out of the situation. That's what I developed. I never get out of bad situations. I just stay in them and look at the positive aspects of them until it just wears me down until I can't take it anymore. But that's what happened. And as a child, I swallowed all this stuff. And it finally started coming out at the age of 35. And I was like, what is this? What is this hatred? What is this anger? What is this fear? What are these tears about? What is this sadness? I'm describing it very stoically right now. I'm describing it very matter-of-factly, but I don't have an emotional attachment to them anymore. And that's a good sign. That's a good sign that I actually healed from a lot of this stuff and have gotten through a lot of this stuff. And it absolutely helped me cure my depression. It took me about 2 years to get out of depression, but it was because I had to address all of these things that were inside me. The very first time that hate came up for me, my invalidation was, I'm not supposed to hate. And I held that invalidation all my life because I'm supposed to see the positive side of everything. Think positively, you know? So I never looked at it. And when it finally came out, I thought, what the heck is this? But it came out and allowed me to feel a little bit lighter, a little bit more free. I liked that feeling and said, wow, what else is in there? I want you to ask that question. What else is in there? Because this depression really needs to be addressed. And I know you're doing it. I know you're doing everything you can. And again, I know if you could, you would. But the reason I'm saying this is because bringing a child into this scenario, if you're hoping the child will make you feel better, then I just want you to be very careful about that. That's another aspect of it. And I do want you to consider as well, what is in your life today that's making you depressed? Because here's the thing. Sometimes depression comes from the past. Well, it always comes from the past, but I mean like from childhood. But sometimes depression comes from the recent past. Sometimes depression comes from, I'm just going to throw this out there, I married the wrong person. Or now that I've married this person, he or she does things that I don't like or aren't very supportive of me or something else. Or I've made the wrong decisions. I have the wrong job. I live in the wrong town. These could be recent past events that if those haven't been addressed, if those haven't come up for you in conversation, if you haven't been able to express that kind of stuff, then that can lead to depression because you're suppressing your thought, repressing your emotion, which could lead to you holding on to them. And if they have nowhere to go, if they're not expressed, they stay in there and they weigh down your system. They stop the flow of emotional energy going through you so that you can't feel light and free and happy. or at least not unhappy. At least some sense of feeling comfortable in your own skin. So that's why I think it's vital that you really address this depression and ask the questions, what in my life, if it changed, besides having a new child, what in my life, if it changed, would make me feel better? I mean, think about this for a moment. Let's just say I asked you the question, what would happen if you never got married? And you might say, well, I wouldn't have my child. I have a child now and I love this child, but I wouldn't have that child. Or I wouldn't have my husband. I love my husband. So if that's the case, if those are your true answers, maybe that's not what's contributing to the depression. But if you really think about what in your life, if it changed, would make you feel better or would resolve the depression, what would your answer be? And even if you say, nothing could resolve this depression, I've tried everything, then do some imagination exercises here and think about, okay, and this is going to be tough, but I'm going to throw it at you. What if my father died? What if my mother died? What if my sister, my brother, people in my life that have affected me in some way died? What if they weren't there anymore? What if they never existed? That might be a little tough, but you have the opportunity to imagine what it would be like if certain people weren't in your life. Or what if they were alive and you could make a phone call and say anything you want to them? These are exercises I really want you to do because there's probably one or two or more people in your life that maybe you haven't expressed what you wanted to express to. There was this kid that dated my sister, and I really didn't like him. I was a teenager at the time, and he was just cocky and arrogant, and he didn't really care about me. He just wanted to date my sister, which I didn't care. I don't care if he cared about me or not, but he would talk to me as if he were my friend, but I just didn't like him. There was something about him I just didn't like. I didn't like his friend. His friend actually threatened to punch me in the face, so there were some other things going on there, but he was going to marry my sister, and so my parents gave them some land so that when they got married, they would have land to build on. Well, they broke up, and then this kid sued my parents to keep the land. I'm like, what? Why would you do that? It's not your land. And it was predicated on the fact that you would be marrying my sister. So it was a mess. He ended up with the land. And I had some feelings about that. I didn't find out about it till years later, but I had some feelings about it. So I have considered what it would be like if I could have him in front of me and talk to him, say something to him, punch him in the face, or even, and this is all in my mind, kill him. Kill the representation of him in my mind. What would that feel like? I'm not saying this turns into something real, and I don't want it to. I just want you to help your brain find closure because the brain needs closure sometimes. Sometimes you have these things that are open. I call them open loops. You have these open loops in your mind of unfinished business in your past. And how do you finish that business if they're not around or you can't get a hold of them or they're too far away or you don't really want to talk to them anyway? What do you do? How do you get closure? You just visualize it. There they are. There he is sitting in front of me. What am I going to do? I'm going to tell him off, punch him in the face, you know, whatever comes up, and really play it out, the whole scenario, until it's done. Then when the scenario is done, how do I feel then? Do I feel better? Do I feel different? Do I feel worse? I assess myself after I go through this process. And the great thing is if I feel worse, like let's just say I killed him in my imagination, if I feel bad about that, I just bring him back to life. And then when he's back to life, I can replay it and redo it and do it a different way. It's a really neat thing. I highly recommend if you have unfinished business in your past and you have no plans to talk to the person or address the person directly, just visualize the person. Do whatever comes to mind. Don't hold back because what it does is bring closure to the mind. So I really like that and it does work for a lot of people. All right, hang in there. We got some more to talk about. We'll be right back after this. I just listened to the latest episode of a Better Night's Sleep podcast with Dr. Kim, a research psychologist at the Defense Health Agency, and she was interviewing Dr. Olin, the director of the sleep lab at Fort Carson, where they were talking about someone with insomnia. And I've learned some very useful tips. For example, one of them was turn your clock around. And Dr. Olin's like, yeah, you can turn your clock around. The first few nights, it's going to drive you crazy. But people with insomnia check the clock all the time. And I thought, that's interesting. I don't do that myself, but I remember not being able to sleep, constantly looking at the clock. Turning it around? What? Then I won't be constantly reminded of the time. He goes, the first few nights, it'll drive you crazy, but then you get used to it, and that stimulus goes away. Because it's a stimulus when you look at the clock. I'm like, whoa. So there's a lot of good information in this show, and I want you to tune into it. It's called A Better Night's Sleep Podcast. And because of this show, I've given up almost all of my caffeine. I mean, I haven't had caffeine in a few days now, and I talked about this, I think, last week. I've given up caffeine before, but then I believed, caffeine doesn't affect me. But I had so many sleep issues, so many brain fog issues, that I realized something's going on, and I had to blame the caffeine, because I love iced tea, I love black tea, and I finally decided after listening to the show that I'm going to stick to herbal teas. So now I've had no exposure to caffeine for a few days now, and I'm feeling so much better, and I do owe it to a Better Night's Sleep podcast. I'm not saying you have to give up caffeine or give up anything, I'm just saying that there's tidbits in there that you're going to find very, very helpful. And one thing I like about their show is that these are quick episodes. Like the last episode I listened to was 15 minutes. You know, this show is like an hour. And some people write to me and say, your show's too long. And I go, well, it is what it is. But I want you to tune into a Good Night's Sleep podcast. They have leading sleep experts in the military health system about how to improve your sleep habits. I know military. It's not just a military show. They cater to everyone. They focus on military people because of the unique set of circumstances there, but they are absolutely helpful to everyone and well worth listening to. A lot of science, too. I mean, there's a psychologist running the show. So if you want to learn about sleep disorders, nightmares, sleep treatments, and more, open your favorite podcast player and check it out, A Better Night's Sleep Podcast, and, you know, look it up in your favorite search engine if you can't find them, so that you can get a great night's sleep, too. A Better Night's Sleep Podcast. I want you to have a better night's sleep. Subscribe, learn, and sleep well. Back to this dilemma that you're in, Mary. So the question that you have is, you know, what do I do? I don't know what to do. Where do I go from here? So if you can't get a solid yes or no from your husband and you are starting to build resentment toward him, I would absolutely say, you know what? I'm starting to build resentment toward you. We had an arrangement. We had a commitment. And you changing this is really upsetting me. If he's the kind of guy I think he is, he's probably going to say, I'm so sorry. You're right. You're right. You're right. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm on board. He may do that, or he may not. He may stick to his guns and say, I get it, but I felt that way once, and I'm so sorry, but we just don't have the money, and I know we don't, or I just think it's not going to work out. Then at least you'll have a more solid no that you can work with. It doesn't make it an easier decision, but at least it's more tangible. But my point is to just be honest. I am feeling resentful. We had an agreement, and now you're backing out of this agreement. I feel that is, how about disrespectful? I feel like you're disrespecting me. I feel like, you know, what do you feel, Mary? What do you feel that's coming up because of all this? Because if you're not expressing this stuff, guess what you're doing? You're adding to that depression. You need to bring this stuff up and out. Even if you know there's not going to be a good resolution, even if you are afraid that it will drive a wedge in your relationship, because it could, but anything could. Leaving the toothpaste cap off could, leaving the toilet seat up could. Anything could drive a wedge in your relationship, so you might as well be as honest as you can possibly be so that you can get it all out on the table. I'm a full proponent of what's going on in me. If I can't resolve it, I need to talk to my partner about it. I'm not saying you have to do this with everything in your life. I'm just saying that I am a proponent. This is what I practice, and this is what I encourage my girlfriend to practice. If there's something going on in you that you can't resolve, let's talk about it. So this is something going on in you that you can't resolve. You're starting to feel resentment. And I think it's important that you bring that up if you haven't already. I'm starting to feel resentment. I'm starting to, you know, think, what are the words that come up? I'm starting to hate you. If that's in you, talk about it. Because if he doesn't have a chance to answer to what you're going through and the negative buildup that is happening inside of you, it's going to multiply and become worse and worse and worse in you until it comes out in an explosion or a breakdown, a meltdown of some sort. And he'll be like, whoa, where did this come from? Maybe. But that's the idea of continuing to be expressive and say the things that are scary to say. So I really want you to consider that if you haven't yet. Because quite frankly, there's no easy answer to this. You know, I could look at this and say, well, your values have stayed the same and his have changed. Because right now he's prioritizing money, health, other things over having a child with you. He's prioritizing his values over yours. And I had an episode a few weeks ago on when you honor your own values over your partner's. I had an episode on that, and I'm not saying that that episode applies to what you're going through here, but that could be happening too. And at the same time, you know, when did you start planning for this? I like to see both sides of this. Did you start planning for this 2 or 3 years ago and things have changed? The economy is tough now. Your bills are more. I don't know. Because if things have changed and you've had serious discussions about finances and that is one of his worries, are you also looking at all of his facts, all of his data points? Because it's important that you also try to understand his point of view and at least try to see where he's coming from. And I think you have. I think you may be that type of person that you are trying to see where he's coming from. And if that's the case, then you can go, okay, let's assess all of this. Let's just take out the idea that we both agreed to have a baby and let's see where we are. And if it's possible, can we do this? Even coming up with a plan together that if you had a baby, how would it work? And be really, I don't want to say rational about it, but certainly analytical about it. Be really analytical about it. Let's take out the emotion of having a baby and just put in the data points. Let's put in the facts. And you can write down your budget. You can write down your life goals. You can write down all of the possibilities of, okay, when our baby grows up and they're 20 and we're 60 plus, is that going to be okay with us? Is that going to be hard on us? Put down all the facts. Try to separate emotionally because you can work together on this. Try to separate the emotion of having a child and what that means to you and put in all the facts because I want you both to be very clear of what it entails having a child at this age. And you probably already talked about this, but things have changed and now you're building resentment, which means you probably don't agree with what has changed. And it sounds like regardless of the data that he seems to be presenting, you disagree with it. So I think it's important to find some level of agreement with the data. Because if he has an opportunity to present, you know, we make X number per year, and this child will minus that by this number per year, this is why I'm worried. And this will involve you empathizing with him. And that'll be tough because you are both on board with having a child and you have to do the major, all of it, having the child, part of that. And you have a lot invested into that. And of course, the guy isn't so physically invested that he has the child, but he has the child with you. So there is an investment, but you know what I'm saying? The physical, the pain, the carrying and all that stuff is the woman's job. So you definitely have more invested, more thought invested into it. Whereas a guy could essentially walk away and go, okay, we won't have a child. And your motherly instincts could be already on full throttle trying to make this happen. And because he doesn't have those same maternal things going on, it may seem to you that he's just walking away and it's easy for him, but maybe it's not. I'd really like you to go over the data points if you haven't already, step out of the emotion, and look at it in a serious way. It's just like if you were going to buy a car. If we're going to buy a car, what are the monthly payments? What will it look like in 5 years? What will it look like in 10 years? So on and so forth. So if you haven't done that, do that as well. And let me give you my last bit of quote wisdom. I quote that because it's not necessarily something wise I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you something that comes from me personally, not professionally. This is my personal opinion. If you were my friend and we were at a coffee shop and you told me this, the thing I would say from a personal friend perspective is, what? This is what he agreed to, so tell him too bad it's going to happen. Again, this is not my professional perspective, but personally, I would look at a friend and go, what are you talking about? He agreed to it and now he's pulling out? Oh no. You tell him, we're going to have it whether you like it or not. I'm not saying that you should do this. I'm just saying, you know, have you had that kind of discussion? Have you had the discussion where you tell him, we agreed to this. You're going to love it whether you like it or not. So you better get on board with it, pal. That's where I go personally with it. I could never give you that advice professionally because it's not necessarily conducive to a happy, healthy relationship. But personally, I'm thinking, what? Why are you backing out now? No, no. If you're with me, we're having another kid because you agreed to it. You made this commitment. This is where we're going with it. Too bad. And of course, I would think about that for a moment and think, well, if that drives him away, what would I do about that? And, you know, there's other factors involved there. But that's the first place I go to. Now, that could open up more conversation, important conversation, and some real stuff would come out. Because what probably may not have happened yet is the real reason he doesn't want to have a kid might still have not been revealed yet. I don't mean to put another wrench in the fan there, but if there's another reason that he doesn't want to reveal to you and he's just using these other things as excuses, the money, the health, we're getting up in age, then you need to find out that real reason. And the question might be, seriously, what is the real reason? You know we can afford it. You know I'm healthy and I can have this child. What is your real reason? See what he says. What are you so afraid of? See what he says. Like I said, I don't know if you've talked about this or not, but that's a good question. What is the real reason? Just tell me. I can handle it. I'm an adult. Just tell me. And maybe you'll get an answer you haven't heard before. Now, the last thing you said was, you know, part of me thinks God wants me to take more time for myself before taking care of another child. You know, I think you need to meditate or pray or whatever you need to do and go inside and ask that question. Maybe the answer is in there and maybe you don't want to face the truth. Maybe there is a truth that you don't like and you're trying to deny it or get away from it. Maybe there is another answer in there. You know, I do something every now and then, and I learned this from my girlfriend, is that as soon as I'm starting to dream, you know, when you're falling asleep, I don't know how many people can do this, but I've started to pay attention when I start to fall asleep. And it's interesting because it can keep you awake paying attention. But I practiced it. But as I fall asleep, if I'm starting to go into my subconscious, I'm starting to get into that deeper state. I don't know if it's like alpha or delta waves or whatever it is, but there's a point where I'm no longer fully conscious and I'm actually experiencing some of my subconscious thought stream. It's really strange, but every now and then I'll hear someone say my name or yell something, or I'll see something like I'm starting to dream. It's just like on the initial stages of starting REM sleep or dream sleep. And when that happens, if there's something that's been on my mind and I can catch it right before I fall asleep, I ask myself the question that I want to sleep with. I mean, it sounds a little weird, but if I were you, I would ask, can you guide me to the right answer? Is this the time to take care of myself? Is this a good time to have a child? You might want to break it down into one question. Is this the right time to have a child? Might be a good question if you do this. But that's something that my girlfriend does. She asks herself a question right before she goes to sleep, and then she wakes up with an answer. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And if you don't get an answer the first night, you try it again. And I tell you what, it works. She wakes up with full songs in her head, and she will go write down the song and have a song created in a few days. And she comes up with some pretty amazing stuff. And I'm thinking, wait. What are you accessing? I'd like to access this. So I tried it. I just asked my subconscious mind a question, and I fell asleep. And the next morning, I woke up really early, and the answer was popping. It was like coming out. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to do. I was like, really? That doesn't make any sense. But I wrote it down. I put it in my little computer tablet next to my bed. And I fell back asleep so I could get it out of my head. I highly recommend when you come up with an answer, when you come up with some sort of solution, even if it sounds a little nuts, just write it down so that you can get it out of your head. And then if you want to sleep more, if you have time, you can do that. Because that's what happens is that you'll come up with an answer and then you'll fall asleep and forget it. I mean, my girlfriend has forgotten so many songs because of this, but she's learned to write them down now or record them on her phone. And that's what I've been practicing. I don't have too many questions that I'm pondering, but when I do, I'll just ask my subconscious mind. And this has worked several times, and I'm here to say that we have a lot of inner wisdom. You have a lot of inner wisdom, Mary, and I want you to use it. I want you to be able to access that. And you've been way too conscious about everything, overthinking things, so much inner dialogue, just talking to yourself. So you mentioned God, so use that as your guide so that when you're falling asleep, you can just plant that seed so you can wake up with something that maybe has blossomed overnight. That'd be pretty cool. Mary, thank you so much for writing, and I wish you the best. There is no perfect answer to this. I've just given you my insights and opinions, and hopefully you can take some time to yourself, ask yourself these questions, come up with these answers, and also everything else I said, talking with your husband and either getting a solid yes or no and writing down all the facts and doing all the things that I suggested or any of the things that I suggested to get you into a better space with this. It's definitely a personal decision. I don't know how to guide you precisely there, but I hope this helps. Thanks for writing. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank A Better Night's Sleep Podcast. You know what to do. Open your favorite search engine or podcast player and type in A Better Night's Sleep Podcast. And I want to thank the patron members over at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. If you join the patron program, you get all kinds of private episodes, workbooks, video library, and more. Plus, you can get e-coaching with me if you're interested in working with me at your convenience and you just want to be able to write out what's going on in your life. I'm happy to write back and guide you through those challenges. I get a lot of good feedback on that program. So check it out, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And thank you, existing patron members. You are a huge supporter of this show, and I appreciate you. And thank you to those using the Amazon button at theoverwhelmedbrain.com. That is another way that you help fund this show to keep it going, to keep it on the air, to pay for all the expenses, and it's easy to do. Go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, click on the Amazon button, and just shop on Amazon. You can get anything you want. So check it out, and thank you to those who are doing that now. And I want to tell you about the Mean Workbook. If you're in an emotionally abusive relationship, or you don't know that you are, this workbook is designed to help you understand what emotional abuse is, and what are all the signs and symptoms. But not only that, it's got a 200-point checklist that you can go through and say, my relationship has this, my partner is doing that, I feel this. And at the end of that checklist, there's an evaluation that you can see exactly how deep the emotional abuse, the manipulation, whatever's going on in your life is, so that you can do something about it. Doesn't mean you have to break up. It might. but it doesn't always mean that it's a total loss. The book gives you clarity on exactly what you need to do next and what to expect. So if you're in this state of, I'm not sure why my relationship is so complicated, I don't know why I feel guilty all the time, or I don't know, I feel like I'm doing something wrong, and especially I can't even trust my own decisions, and you might have something going on there. So go to loveandabuse.com and check out the Mean Workbook. It may be just what you need. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. All right, we're going to do something a little different to close the show, and I've not done something like this before where I brought in my girlfriend Asha. I conferred with her on the subject of today's show earlier, and she had a lot of opinions on it, but as I read her the rest of the message, it kind of brought up conversation for both of us. You know, what do you do? What do you do in that situation when your partner has a different set of values, or it has changed over the course of the relationship, or even like in this letter, in the course of a few months. And so I wanted to bring her on the end of this show to ask her a question. I'm setting her up right now to ask her a question that she doesn't even know I'm going to ask, having to do with the letter that Mary wrote to me, because she can speak from the perspective of a parent and of someone in a relationship. And I'm going to throw this question at you, Asha. You may not remember the full context of the email, but this woman wrote in and she was with her husband and they were trying to conceive a child a few months ago and they wanted another child. She's 40 and I don't know how old he is, but he decided to change his mind and said, you know what? We got to look at our finances. We got to look at our future. I want to change my mind. And I think it really devastated her. And now she's starting to build resentment toward her husband because she doesn't know exactly what to do from this point on. She still wants the kid. Now, a little extra information is that she's been depressed. And this is, I think, the conversation that you and I had. And this is something I highlighted and talked about. And you haven't heard me talk about this. So I just want to get your opinion on this situation. Do you have any thoughts on this that might be... And I want you to be honest. You're already smiling. I want you to be honest. And I can bleep out any swears and all that stuff. So I'm going to give this to you and just go ahead and give me your thoughts from your perspective.
Well, as usual, I have a lot of opinions about this. So there's so many factors at play here, and they really are all important. I don't think you can take out any detail and then make an opinion. There's a lot going on. They already have one child. They're older. He's trying to plan for retirement. She wants another baby. But she also clearly said, I'm not happy. I think I'm depressed. I've been depressed for years. The medication isn't helping. So there's extra strain here because I'm sure that the husband is well aware of this. So he probably feels a sense of responsibility to her and any children they already have or might have if she's struggling with depression, because depression can be severe and debilitating. And even at a mild grade, it affects everything in your life. I mean, it affects your work. It affects your ability to be happy just at home in the family. It affects your ability to take care of another little being, let alone the ones that you already have. I've struggled with depression over the course of my life, especially when I was younger, before I remembered, you know, the abuse, whatnot. And it really takes a toll on you mentally. So the way I look at things when I'm trying to make decisions, and I've had to do this in the past, especially in complicated, difficult decisions, is... will I regret it for the rest of my life if I don't at least open myself to try to have another child? That doesn't mean that I'm going to get pregnant, because maybe I won't. But if that's really what I want, will I regret it for the rest of my life if I don't try? If I will, then I know that that's the direction I'm going to need to go. Now, the husband has said that he's willing to support her if that's what she really wants, and that it's not an adversity to another child, but that he feels like the timing isn't right. And it sounds to me like he's well aware of all these other things going on. You know, when you're older, you want to retire someday. You want to nurture the family that you already have. Women's biological clocks, their eggs get old, and you have more potential risks when you're doing that. Plus, add the depression in. You know, it's just really complicated. And I think the only way to handle it is to say, well, will I regret it if I don't try this? Or if I do try it and it drives a wedge in the family that I already have, will I regret that? Because the other thing to evaluate is, if this is really that important to me, what's more important? My current situation and my family unit that I have and that I value, or having a new child? You know, sometimes there is not a clear, stellar win over something else. And I think we really need to evaluate, what's the most important? What's the most near and dear thing that you have in your heart? She said, I want to follow my heart and I want to be happy. She was even talking about work options. So to me, I hear that there's a void already. So many people have another child thinking that that's going to fill the void. It's going to help make things better. What I hear in this situation is a little scary to me, because you're not going to fill the void with a new child. Wherever you go, there you are. And it may seem like a good, quick, temporary fix because it does give you something else to focus on. But in the end, that depression is going to come back if you don't continue to work on yourself, get help, whether it's therapy or coaching or medication or spirituality or whatever else. It's not just going to go away magically because you have another child that is, anybody who's a parent knows, they suck on you, literally and figuratively. They're wonderful. And they're a lot of emotional work, a lot of physical work. So I think this is something that needs to be really carefully evaluated and really talked about openly and honestly. And if you're having feelings of resentment, you got to talk to your partner about that. The worst things that I've ever seen happen in my life in relationships is because I don't speak up and say how I'm feeling. I don't tell my truth. I'm afraid of the repercussions. I'm afraid to be seen. I'm afraid to be mean to the other person, or perceived as mean, or perceived to be nitpicking, or whatever. And the best thing that you can do is really have the open heart-to-heart conversation about, this is where I am. This is how I feel. I'm starting to feel resentful. I don't know how to control it. But I've never seen good things come by taking on a new responsibility when you're already having some issues that you're trying to work through. You don't find happiness by having a baby. You make yourself happy and busy and find a way to get there and be okay with whatever it is. You know, even in wanting a relationship for myself, I finally had to get to a point where, you know what? This may never show up for me, but this is the level of what I want, or nothing less. And I am going to be happy and busy and taking care of myself and doing what I can do and not rely on that other person or being or situation to fulfill me. Because if so, then my fate is not in my hands. It's in the conspiring of the universe or somebody else. And one of the things she wrote in the letter was, depresses me a little bit. I'm paraphrasing here because I can't find it quickly, but I have no control over what I want in my life because of my spouse. I think that is not true. She definitely has control over what she wants in her life. The question is, how far is she willing to go? And what is the real value? What is the most important thing to her? What can she not live without? What, if she does it, will she regret? Or if she doesn't do it, will she regret for the rest of her life? She has total control. And it's only that we become depressed and helpless and miserable and resentful. In my experience, resentment only comes when you're not speaking up for yourself. You're not saying what you need to say. That's when people get resentful. Then once you get that out, boy, the resentment can melt away very quickly. And you do have total control. You can say, I want another baby and I'm going to do it. You can say, you know what, my current family is too important to me, or I value my health more, and I'll leave myself open to the possibility. And if you believe in God, I think she mentioned God, trust that you will be taken care of and that you'll know the right thing in the right time while you prioritize taking care of yourself first. Because if you don't start there, it's not going to get better. It's just not. That's my opinion.
You echoed a lot of sentiments that I had as well. So it's amazing to hear your perspective. I know we talked about it a little bit, but we didn't get into all these little details that you just brought up. And you didn't even hear me talk about this stuff earlier, but you have echoed some of the things I said as well. And bringing up the idea of taking care of yourself, especially, and believing. I mean, like Asha says, you either have faith or you don't. So you just put all your faith into your faith and know that maybe this is the path. And the path that we want sometimes isn't the one that pans out for us. So I think that's a really good lesson to learn in life, is that sometimes when the path that we want doesn't get laid out before us, can we accept the path that we have? Like Asha said, and I said earlier, fully accept it. Come into that solid yes, that solid no, and just make it the new path of your life. Some things you can do that in life, and I understand some things you can't. Some things you do not want to be real, but when you really feel like you have no choice, there might need to be that acceptance. And when you come to a full acceptance and just realize this is the way it is, it can be easier to sort through and get through. Again, tough subject. I am so grateful for you, Asha. Thank you for joining me. And thank you out there in the listening audience for joining me as well. And you know how it goes. You got to keep your mind open so that you can step into your power and be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.